Hey guys, Micah Chen here from Cascadia Preps. Looking for the best coverage of high school football? Cascadia Preps is your number one stop for all things high school football, team rankings, game analysis, and weekly podcasts from around the state. Visit us today at CascadiaPreps.com.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Greetings and welcome into Huffman and Spencer for October 12th, 2022. I'm Ryland Spencer of Cascadia Preps, along with me, as always, Brandon Huffman of the Avery Huffman DIPG Foundation and 24/7 Sports. Brandon, how we doing?
You know, Ryland, I am doing better than Robbie Ray is doing.
Oh, Jesus. Why? I mean, you know what? This is where I should just, like, instantly start going, like, Gary DeSarcina.
Well, there's been so many references to 1995. That, yeah. I've been waiting for that fastball down the middle for when it came.
I don't understand it, man.
I'm not a petty person at all. Not at all. Petty isn't even in my name. However, Mike Trout's never blown a save in the playoffs for all you people that kept wanting to say Jared Kelenic has more hits and
Luka
Rodriguez has more playoff wins. Well, Mike Trout has less playoff saves than the Cy Young Award winner that the Mariners signed last year.
I mean, let's be honest here, though.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Robbie Ray didn't win the Cy Young. Everybody else lost it.
Yes.
Because his numbers most years are not winning a Cy Young. Like, yes. It's just not. But, yeah, I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand that move. You know, I saw some people that are like, well, lefty on lefty. Nope. I don't care about that. Lefty on lefty is not really a thing when you have, you know, the – best, one of the best home run hitters in the game up to bat. Like, no. As a matter of fact, I would have much rather that they walked him and kept pitching Seawald than to bring in Robbie Ray lefty on lefty.
Yeah.
I would have rather done that, because you still had two outs. All you had to do was get one out before the two run score. And if the two run score, you still go to extras. So not a big deal. So you bring in Robbie Ray, who throws one right down the junk. I mean, like, that would have hit Cal Raleigh in the nads if he didn't, you know, if it didn't go to the upper deck to hit somebody in the nads. Like, you know, I don't know. I do think it's funny that the ball landed, like, in a pocket of seats that had nobody in them because they'd already left. Like,
right.
That is really funny.
It was funny, too, because there was that one Mariners fan who was sitting in the second row.
Yes.
And, boy, he had this big smile on his face right until that pitch, and then his face went from upright to dead even pretty quickly. But listen, as an Angels fan who watched the Angels lose an entire series off a lefty-lefty, when your starter, your ace, I guess at that time Bartolo Colon was their ace, but Jared Washburn, who had been their ace the year of the World Series, Mike Socha brought him in game three of an extra inning game on the road in Fenway, and David Ortiz went opposite field over the Green Monster to win the series. So I can attest that that is a painful way to lose, but at least you still got at least two more games.
Yeah, well, and the thing for me, I turned it off, tweeted a couple of idiotic things, and then went to a hockey game, and the Thunderbirds won, so the night wasn't a total loss, let's say that. And they had half-price beer, so that was always a good thing.
Thirsty Tuesday, baby.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. They have $7 tall boys, the big ones, the 24-ouncers of Rainier. I mean, sign me up. And the team is really, really good this year. I think they're ranked fourth in all of Canada, the Thunderbirds are. Hey, Avery Huffman DIPG Foundation, AveryStrongDIPG.org, AveryStrongDIPG on all social medias. Brandon, what's going on over there this month? October's a special month. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, though.
It's the month of Avery's birthday, so it's her birthday month. September's Childhood Cancer Awareness. October is her birthday month. Her birthday is actually a week from today. So when we do our next recording, it'll be on what would have been her 14th birthday. But it also kind of begins when we start ramping up towards end of year giving and end of year donations. There's Giving Tuesday, which is the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, kind of following Black Friday, Cyber Monday, all those. Giving Tuesday has always been a big day in terms of giving, but we've kind of in the last 2 years really pushed that to just be kind of end of year giving from, her birthday up until the end of the calendar year. So that's really what's going on. We're in the process of finalizing gear. We'll actually be meeting with some of the families that we're funding a couple projects with this weekend. And we've approved two different projects that we should be having a press release out here in the next 2 to 3 weeks about the two next projects that our foundation is funding. So a lot of good stuff happening with our finances going into action for research purposes.
Now tell me this, is there a way for us to like know who donates money on Giving Tuesday?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We track all that because it's all for tax purposes. So we track it all.
So can the people put in like a note with it also?
Uh-huh. Absolutely. They can do it in honor of, you know, an aunt that died or an uncle who died or so, whoever they want to do it. There's a way to honor or who you're doing it in memory of or in honor of.
Well, I think one thing we should think about is if they donate and they put in, you know, I don't know, Cascadia Preps or something. I mean, I don't want them to put Cascadia Preps, but you know what I mean? Like, we can have them put in a code word, and if they donate, say, $50 or more, we can mention them here on the podcast.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, we got a couple of weeks to think about that. I mean, or over a month, because that's what is that? That would be like in the 20s.
6 weeks out from that.
Yeah, yeah, we're a little ways away, so we got some time to think about that, but we should definitely think about something like that, because I think that's, I mean, it's an easy thing for us to do, and it's an easy thing for people to do. Just get on, donate some money. Yeah, I mean, you can keep up with everything on AveryStrongDIPG.org, AveryStrongDIPG, all social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, they're out there. You can find it nice and easy. Brandon, we got lots of stuff to talk about here, not a lot of time. Going to be a shorter one this week because you've got an appointment to go to here in a little bit. But one of the things I want to talk about, we've talked about it before. I want to talk about the FCS rankings just a little bit because the Big Sky, they're having it. I mean, they're doing it again. The Big Sky right now, as I look at the through October 9th is what it says here. Through October 9th, the number one and number two have remained the same all year. That's North Dakota State and South Dakota State. And then actually, number three and number four have remained the same the entire year. Also, that's Montana, excuse me, and Montana State. But then right behind them, Sacramento State and Weber State. So four of the top six, number three, four, five, and six, are all from the Big Sky. Montana, Montana State, Sacramento State, Weber State. And then, if you scroll down a little bit, you got to go outside of the rankings at this point. But in the others receiving votes, we've got Idaho and Eastern Washington. Eastern Washington now, it's almost not even fair what has happened to them. They have played probably one of the toughest schedules in all of college football. I mean, you know, their losses, it's amazing, but their losses right now are to, they beat Tennessee State week one, but then they've lost four straight, and it was to Oregon, Montana State by three, who, by the way, I think I mentioned was number four, Florida, which was a Sunday game after Hurricane Ian, I think it was. Yes. And then they had to come back home, or excuse me, they had to come back to the West Coast, but go to Weber State, where they lost 45-21 last week. And then they get to play, oh, by the way, Sacramento State this week. I mean, it doesn't get any easier for Eastern Washington. But, yeah, I mean, this is what we talked about. I want to say we talked about it in the preseason when the preseason rankings came out because there was like five or six teams in the top 25. But I mean, it's just it's awesome to see because as you look over Montana, Montana State, Sacramento State, Weber State, there's kids from the state of Washington just littered across these teams. And then obviously Eastern Washington has just an absolute load. And so does Idaho. Idaho's got, I think, somewhere in the range of like 35 kids from the state of Washington, which is just awesome to see. But, yeah, I mean, to me, I've said it now for a little while, that is almost like the SEC of the FCS. It really is.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is more like the let's look at the Big Sky rankings with other FCS schools in it.
Yeah,
like that's how dominant it is. And I mean, you know, go back to Idaho. I mean, if you look at their schedule too, they have two losses, both to Power Five schools, both games that they either led or were tied with at the half on the road at Washington State week one, on the road at Indiana in week two. You know, and then they've won the games that they're supposed to. But like for a school that is really, you know, not had a lot of success, say that bowl season a few years ago, you know, what a great job Jason Eck has done in year one over there in Moscow.
Yeah. I mean, this is a program that was really on hard times, a program that was very much down. And I mean, I know people were just not happy with what was going on over there, but you know, there was a lot of fundraising issues and, you know, different things going on. And now they've got, I mean, they've got it rolling a little bit over there. And like you said, it's still very early. I mean, we're basically halfway through year one of Jason Eck and his staff. I mean, that's pretty remarkable that they're getting, you know, any type of attention. And, you know, they're 3-2 on the year. I mean, beat Northern Colorado, beat Northern Arizona, and beat Drake. I mean, hammered Drake. Who, by the way, has Christian Galvin, I think it is, from Bothell. Oh, yeah. Northern Arizona, I think the only player left down there from our state is Olajuwon Taylor, was it?
I think you're right, yeah.
Played at Union. And then Northern Colorado has, what, Josiah Snow Marshall, Jacob Sermon. Oh, what's the young man's name from North Creek from last year? The DB.
Oh, yes, Rocco Traore.
Yes, Rocco Traore. Oh, and then they have, I can't remember the kicker's name. There's a kicker from Lake Washington that's out there. So yeah, I mean, it's cool to see. It really is really cool to see, especially Idaho. I mean, I felt for a long time that Idaho was, especially that last staff, I felt like they were really missing the boat in the Seattle area. And now they've clearly made a commitment to this area. You know, they've got a few commitments, you know, from guys, Hayden John up in Anacortes, and, what's the running back's name? From Tumwater.
Carlos Matheny.
Carlos Matheny is committed there. By the way, another commitment, Montana State picked up Scott Trey Humphrey.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that is a phenomenal commitment for not only him, but for that team. I think he's going to come in there. I think he's going to be Isaiah Fonse, which has been very, very good for Montana State. Obviously, he's, you know, I believe he has not played at all this season because he's been hurt. But, you know, I think that's a tremendous commitment for a young man that, you know, maybe he's a tad bit undersized, but he is built really well. I mean, he is, yes, he hasn't missed the weight room, like, at all, as far as I can tell. And that guy's on some pretty hefty protein shakes or something. I don't know what's going on there, but he is really well put together. But he can run, too. That's the crazy thing about Scott Trey. But, yeah, I mean, it's really cool to see because, you know, the Pac-12 obviously is the big name. The Mountain West is a name as well. But I think more people up in our area probably care a lot more about the Big Sky than they do the Mountain West. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know I do personally. I mean, I like the Mountain West. You know, there's a lot of kids that we have, you know, from our state on those teams. But watching the Big Sky every year is just so much fun.
And we've talked about it before that, you know, this isn't like in the Southeast where you have, you know, one state might have an SEC, an ACC, a Sun Belt, an American Conference, and a Conference USA program. I mean, in Washington, you either have the Pac-12 or you have the Big Sky. You don't have the Mountain West. In Oregon, you either have the Pac-12 or the Big Sky. You don't have the Mountain West. You know, Idaho doesn't have the Pac-12. They do have the Mountain West, but they also have the Big Sky. You know, Utah, I think, is the only state that has a Pac-12, Mountain West, and Big Sky school outside of California in the Western region. So, you know, naturally, the Northwest kids, there's a reason that the Easterns, the Montanas, the Montana States, and the, you know, the Weber States and the Sac States, they recruit this region. I mean, there's a number of Washington kids on a number of those Big Sky schools. And I think part of the reason is for a lot of these kids, you know, why go to maybe a second tier Mountain West school when you can go to a first tier Big Sky school, play a lot, win, and have a chance at the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, yeah, I mean, definitely have a chance at the next level. I mean, the Big Sky is absolutely scouted by the NFL. Like, it's, you know, they may not be at every single game, but there are a lot of guys paying attention to a lot of those teams. I mean, when, you know, when Montana and Montana State play each other, there's scouts there. When you know, Weber State is playing Sac State, there's scouts. You know what I mean? Like, when the big schools are playing each other, there's absolutely scouts. Now, are they there when, you know, Idaho State is playing Southern Utah? I don't know. Maybe not. Like, I'm sure there's some. But when the big games are played, absolutely, there's a lot of NFL scouts there. And they all have access to the film and everything, too. So, excuse me. It's not like they can't just pull it up and watch it. I mean, last year, what was his name? Was it Troy Anderson, I think, from Montana State that ended up getting drafted fairly high by the Falcons?
I think it was second round, third round?
Yeah, I think it was second round. You know, Samson Ebukam is a very good player for the 49ers now, and he was at Eastern Washington. Obviously, Cooper Kupp. You know, there's so many guys that have come out of the Big Sky and been players. You know, there's – you know, we talked about, I think it was last week, was it Azeem Victor who threw out that tweet about don't go where the NIL money is, go where the best opportunity is. And it's like, you know what? And obviously the Mountain West probably isn't coming in with a lot of NIL money, but if I have a chance to go be a starter in maybe year two at the Big Sky, or, you know, maybe wait my turn and have to really battle for a spot, I'm not saying take the easy way out. I never think you should be doing that. But also, you have to just look at it and you have to really consider things. That's why I always tell people, hey, when you sit down, when you have your final five, take a piece of paper, write down the pros and cons of each one, and put, you know, Utah State on this piece of paper, put Eastern Washington on that one, and put, you know, whatever the other schools are, put them all on their own separate piece of paper, and then kind of go through it, and you just go, you know what? No, this, you know what, this one here, you know, I don't know, Idaho State, it just doesn't match up. Let's take that out. You know, and you just slowly whittle it down. Then now maybe you get down to four, and then you get down to three, and then it's like, all right, well, now I know my final two. I'm going to take official visits and make sure that I have what I want, you know, and then you do it. And, you know, I think a lot of people, they get too hurried, you're too rushed to do things at times. And it's like, man, sometimes you just sit back and think like, man, what exactly was going through their brain when they decided to do that?
Yep.
You know, and it's like, you know, you just look at it, you go, man, the opportunity at this other school is so much better, like so much better, you know? And, you and I were talking off the air. There was a young man who had I think it was a partial, maybe a quarter, maybe a half, I don't know, to one Big Sky school, and another Big Sky school gave him a full. Mm-hmm. And the two schools are not exactly comparable in terms of one has won a lot, the other one has won some. And the young man took the full ride to a school that maybe hasn't done as much winning, because he basically looked at it, he said, hey, look, one, they're going to give me a better opportunity to play, but two, they wanted to invest a full scholarship in me.
Yep.
Whereas the other school, they were like, hey, yeah, you know, we want you to come here and be with your buddies, or, you know, whatever, and yeah, we'll give you a, you know, quarter scholarship. And it's like, no, that's not good enough, man. If you guys really wanted me, you'd give me a full.
Yep.
You know, yes. And I think there's something to be said about that. I think there really is. You know, the other thing, too, and this is something that I think a lot of people don't think about in recruiting, sometimes, yeah, you do have to look at things and go, that whole coaching staff is on the hot seat.
Yes.
You know, USC the last, what, 4 years, it felt like Clay Helton was on the hot seat. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would have been really going after a commitment to USC. Now, obviously, those guys that are there, it's worked out pretty well because Lincoln Riley came in, but they could have hired anybody.
Absolutely.
I mean, and honestly, if you were going into that process and you had a lot of confidence in the USC athletic department to make a really good choice, then you probably haven't been watching USC football for the last 20 years.
Exactly. About
15 years. You know what I mean? Because Pete Carroll was great. After that point, they haven't made exactly a lot of great decisions.
No.
You know? I mean, let's just be honest here. Lane Kiffin was not a great decision for Oakland, for the Raiders. And then Tennessee probably should have hired him.
Right.
And then I don't know how the heck he got the job at USC. You know, like don't get me wrong. I think he has really grown as a coach. And I think he's way better now than he ever was.
Yes.
But to think that at the time that was a good hire, you're insane.
Exactly.
You're insane. And so that's the thing. Like, when you start committing to some of these schools, man, you do have to look at things like, hey, Aaron Best probably isn't going anywhere anytime soon at Eastern Washington.
Right.
You know, I can't think of the coach at Weber State.
Jay Hill. He only goes if Kyle Whittingham retires in Utah and they pass up Morgan Scally, who's been supposedly the coach in waiting there. But I also think, too, you know, to your point, Ryland, that Bo Baldwin's kind of, you know, meteoric rise and then subsequent meteoric fall.
Yeah.
Going to Cal to be the OC, not really being able to get Cal Poly on track just yet. Like, that's also, you know, we saw it 2 years ago when Jeff Choate left Montana State. And, you know, he went to Texas to be – left the head coaching job, goes to Texas. He's a special teams – or, a linebackers coach. We'll see if it works out, but there's been, you know, in recent years, we've seen Power Five schools, FBS schools take away some of the FCS head coaches and it not quite work as magically as they thought. You know, Bobby Houck, Montana gave him that second opportunity. Yep. He went back, and he'll never leave.
Yeah. But the only way he leaves is if they go on, you know, probation or something. You know, like, that's the only way it happens.
Exactly.
Like, he's not going anywhere anytime soon, because not only are they going to be very good for a long time, but he has no reason to leave again.
Exactly.
He has no reason at all.
I think if you look at, you know, what happened with Bobby Houck, what happened with, you know, Bo Baldwin, that might cause more of these really successful G5 coaches to just stay put.
Yeah, I completely agree. And if I'm a, you know, if I'm a lower level coach, I mean, look, what's his name at Mark Few at Gonzaga.
Yeah.
That dude, oh, he could leave. He could take the money and go to, you know, UCLA or go wherever. And it's like, why?
Right.
He could win all he wants at Gonzaga. He could live in Spokane, which is a hell of a lot cheaper to live than anywhere else. And it's not like he's not getting paid really, really well. I mean, at the end of the day, there's a lot of kids that want to go to Gonzaga that aren't basketball players or aren't athletes at all. And a lot of reason they want to go there is because the name Gonzaga stands out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now don't get me wrong. It's a private school. It's a, you know, it's a church school. It is what it is. But there's a lot of kids that end up going to school there that only really know about Gonzaga because of the basketball program. You know, it is a right. massive, massive marketing tool for that.
As they call it, the Flutie effect.
Exactly. It's exactly what it is. And, you know, I think some of these places have done a really good job with their hires too. Montana State, Brent Vegan, unbelievable hire. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember you and I talking about it when he got the job, going, hey, this could be really, really good for Montana State, because we felt like their roster was in a really good spot. By the way, Danny Uluwi-Lakepa is absolutely balling at Montana mm-hmm. State. Like, he has been unbelievable for them. But, you know, and rehiring Bobby Houck, I mean, that just made all the sense in the world at Montana. Yeah. It just did. Troy Taylor at Sacramento State.
Yeah, I mean, Troy Taylor was very successful as the head coach at Folsom.
Yeah, right down the road.
You know, had chances to go to the Pac-12 and coach after he was at Eastern for a couple of years with Bo Baldwin, incidentally. But I think, you know, him being at Sac State, if Sac State, I mean, we've talked about it too, you know, the dearth of Division II schools in California and really on the West Coast in general. I think in the state of Washington, there's one. In Oregon, there's one. British Columbia has one. And then, you know, the Utah schools just had two go up. Then you have, you know, a few more in Colorado. But, like, Troy Taylor is sitting on a gold mine
Absolutely.
Of talent. Sacramento is loaded. And the one thing that why Sacramento State, I think, is going to continue to position themselves to be good is they are getting a lot of bounce backs. And they're getting a lot of those. Yep. Saying, you know, no disrespect to Eastern and to, you know, Weber State, the Montana schools, but there's more players to choose from in the state of California. So if you can get some of those bounce backs, and, you know, the reality is, you know, good of a program as Sac State is, they do not have the academic requirements that UC Davis and Cal Poly San Luis Obispo do. So you're going to get more guys into school. And if you combine really good coaching with a little bit more roster flexibility, you're going to have what Sacramento State has done in the last few years happen consistently. But it's a matter of keeping those coaches. And that's where I think, you know, Troy Taylor seeing Bo Baldwin, who he went and coached with, kind of seeing what's happened to his career since he left Eastern, I think you're going to see more. I mean, the thing with Jeff Choate, that guy was always going to end up being a Power 5 head or back at the FBS level or at a Power 5 school.
Yeah.
I mean, he interviewed for the Boise State job,
yep.
what, 2 weeks before he left for Texas
yep.
and was a finalist. But Jeff Choate's, you know, never really stayed at a job that long. He's done the whole climb the ladder. So him being at Montana State for 4 years is kind of a victory in itself. But I don't see Vegan leaving anytime soon. I think those top-end, upper echelon schools in the Big Sky, those coaches know they got a good thing. They're still getting paid handsomely. Yeah, they're not making $9 million, but they're also probably not getting fired for going 3-3 when they're getting paid $9 million.
Yeah, and I don't see, like, a Jason Eck, I don't know that I see him leaving anytime soon either. I mean, you know, he was at South Dakota State before he came to Idaho. You know, they're obviously very successful. If that head coach moves on, could Jason Eck maybe jump over? Obviously, you know, sure, that's a definite possibility. But, you know, he coached at Idaho before. He coached with Nick Holt and Dennis Erickson, so, you know, he knew what he was getting into at Idaho. I think the facilities were probably better when he showed back up as opposed to when he was there first time around. And I think the commitment to Idaho athletics has really grown in the last probably 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I think they're sitting on a really in a really good spot at Idaho. It's going to be interesting to watch because, you know, when you have five really good receivers, there's only one football to go around, right? Well, you might have five, six really good teams in the Big Sky, and there's only, what, three or maybe four going to get into the tournament, you know? So it's going to be fun to watch because it's just so competitive, you know? And the crazy thing, too, is these teams, they go and they play these, you know, group of five schools. And, you know, one, they beat quite a few of them. I mean, freaking Weber State beat the hell out. Was it Utah State that they beat? Or
yeah.
I mean,
it was Utah State.
Was it Utah State? It was one of the schools there in the.
Yeah, because Blake Anderson ended up calling out the Utah State fans for booing them.
Yeah, well, yeah, sorry. You lost to Weber State bad. Like, you got messed up by Weber State. Don't get me wrong. I ain't talking bad about Weber State. But there's no way a Big Sky school should come in and run you out of your own building, ever.
Yep.
I don't care what team you are in the Mountain West and what team it is from the Big Sky. It just shouldn't happen. I mean, it 100% should not happen. Hey, let's do this really quickly. Thank you, Scott Eklund, for his time.
What's that?
Scott Eklund, dogman.com. I want to thank him for his time. He was out there for a half and then another half, but it was the second half and then the first half is kind of what he did. Maybe even a little bit more, I guess, than just the second half of the first game on Friday night. He pulled a little overtime duty, if you will.
Sure
but did. But yeah, anyway, that's a lot of talk about the Big Sky, and I think it was definitely warranted because those guys are just doing awesome things. Hey, new top 24/7 came out for the class of 2023, and I noticed that Micah Banuelos sneaks in there to the top 24/7, and you know, the thing that I think is interesting about Micah is it's just been kind of he'd been kind of hanging out for a while.
Yes.
And now he has really started to make a jump in the last year or so. And you and I have talked about it. You know, he plays left tackle for Kennedy Catholic, but this is a young man that's going to move inside. I still truly believe, and I will fight people over it, I truly believe his best position would be center if he moved there and really made it a full-time gig. But either way, number three player in the state of Washington now, Brandon. Yeah, I mean, am I right to say he's had kind of a meteoric rise in a way?
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, putting a big piece of brisket on a Traeger where you got to wait a few hours, but if you wait those full hours, you're going to have this awesome brisket. You know, with Banuelos, it's like he was there. It's kind of like staying on the burner. Then the burner is getting a little bit warmer. And now, boom, he's in the top 247. And, you know, watching him play, I think it was week two, you just see the nastiness in which he plays with. I mean, he is the epitome of Jekyll and Hyde. Like, there is just no other apt description. Nicest, sweetest kid off the field. But when he puts his helmet on, it's almost like he becomes Bruce Banner turning into the Hulk. Like, he becomes kind of a psycho. And he loves to mix it up. But, I mean, this is the kid that I think, given his height, may not look like a natural tackle, but he's got an 80-plus inch wingspan. He's got long arms, some length, athleticism, the footwork. So, you know, he was kind of an easy move into the top 247. Now the number three player in the state.
Yeah, and he's a kid, you know, I quote-unquote coached at Kennedy for a week last week, or in week whatever it was, five. You know, I saw a little something in him that I maybe had not really seen before, you know, being right in the middle of everything. One, he's got leadership like you wouldn't believe. You know, I talked about Mason Hayes last week and kind of how he was the true big-time leader of that program. But, you know, Micah Banuelos was right there. The offensive and defensive lines, they were looking at Micah a lot. And the thing that I think was truly impressive is, you know, there's a couple of times where Micah would come out with, you know, maybe he took a helmet to the hip or, you know, whatever. And he was, like, fighting coaches to get back in there. Like, no, I'm good. Let's go. And he would just get right back in there. Man, he is impressive as a defensive player, too. I mean, it really, his aggressiveness maybe even comes out more on defense. And, you know, there was a moment where a young player on their team was going to take a penalty, and Micah kind of stepped in and took the penalty for him. You know what I mean? And I kind of like it because that shows leadership to me, you know? And this is a kid that I think – the referees knew who he was, Micah, in terms of he's a captain, he's this. And, you know, maybe they didn't throw a flag because of it. You know, I don't know. Like, it was entertaining. It was a lot of fun to watch. And by the way, every time he comes to the sideline, it's a quick splash of water, it's a smile on his face, and it's, I'm ready to go back in. Let's go.
I love it.
And then, boom, he's out there ready to mess somebody up. Last week, you and I went to quite a few games. I went and saw Puyallup and Olympia on Thursday night, and then I was at the doubleheader, Eastside Catholic, and Garfield was the nightcap, and O'Day Roosevelt was the day game. Brandon, what games did you get to last week?
So I was at that same doubleheader you were on Friday. On Thursday, I was at Tahoma Federal Way, and then Saturday, I was at Glacier Peak Kamiak, and then Skyline North Creek to cap it.
You went to five games. I only went to two, or I went to three. You're doing more of my number. You might have been to more games than I have this year.
Well, that'll slow down this weekend. I've only got one game I'm going to. That's Thursday night, and then I'm off this weekend doing some father-son stuff. And then the next 3 weeks, I'll be on the road down in Oregon, Northern California, and Idaho watching games. But the next time I watch a high school game in the state of Washington after tomorrow night will be playoff time.
So with all this travel you got going on, does that mean that our guy Scotty Eklund's going to have to pull some duty here, or what do we got going on?
I would say next week you got me, but the 26th, 2 weeks from today, that's all Scotty and you. So, you know, an hour-long podcast, 30 minutes with Scott.
And it'll all be Seinfeld.
Exactly. Scott, you got to stop telling me that you have the same wallet as George Costanza. I've heard that bit 47 times.
Yeah. By the way, you know what? We got to give that guy a little bit of credit for pulling a total pro move.
That was epic.
Yeah, in between the two games. So the first game was a running clock. O'Day really hammered on Roosevelt. I think it was a running clock, or did it just end fast? I think it might have just ended fast. I don't think it ever actually got to a running clock. But that being said, by the way, congrats to Jason Brown on his first interception on the second defensive play he ever had. He got very lucky. The ball just like fell into his hands. But that being said, game is about to end, and Scott says, hey, I'm going to get Dick's driving. So what does he do? He leaves, walks all the way over to the one there at the bottom of Queen Anne Hill. He grabs Dick's driving, and he's back before the start of the next game.
Yep.
I mean, he offered to buy me something. I didn't really want anything because I just had a big burger over at Caird's Public House or something like that. I can't remember what it was called. But, yeah, I mean, he brought you back some food, brought back a couple of deluxes and, what, a shake or something?
Yep. I had a Diet Coke.
Yeah, which, by the way, I don't know what it is about Dick's, but their Coke tastes better than everywhere else other than McDonald's. Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. But, yeah, anyway, so, yeah, we went to a couple of games there together on Friday night. Obviously, Eastside Catholic looked really, really good, just kind of all around. It was a real close game in the first half, but then they just really pulled away. And, you know, they were in the face of EJ Kaminong all night. I mean, they were in his face all stinking night. And the fact that he kind of had as good of a game as he did, but then, you know, he threw some picks. A couple of them were tipped, you know, just maybe not the greatest night of his life, but he still looked pretty impressive, was, you know, something to watch. But let's talk five names here. And the five names that we have are all five guys that we saw this week. And these guys are all committed. But at this point, I think a couple of these guys are very ripe for the taking somewhere else. I truly believe it. The first one we're going to talk about is Dane Parker, two-star athlete out of Puyallup High School. Listed as an athlete, I think he's a safety all the way. 6'1", 180 pounds. And I'll tell you what, he laid a hit on Thursday night down there at Spark Stadium where he was dropping into coverage, threw on the brakes, came straight forward, and there was a crossing route. And he, I mean, we're talking like old school Ronnie Lott, shoulder in the ribs, like make the receiver breathe hard after that type of a hit. And it dislodged the ball. And I'll tell you what, I mean, that was about as impressive of a, you know, ball, you know, what do you call it? Like separating hit that I've seen all year. I think this kid is just getting better and better and better. And as of right now, I would say Air Force is getting an absolute steal.
No question. And I love just his competitiveness. I love the way he plays the game. You know, we saw him at a number of camps, 7-on-7 tournaments this summer and spring. And you just saw a guy, you know, who loves football. I talked to one of the coaches that had him at one of their – had an unofficial visit. He brought a notebook and was taking notes in when he was watching film with the coaches, like just a sponge, wants to learn the game.
That is, I've never heard of that before. Like, I have never heard of that. Is awesome. That is really
in an
funny.
Era where the theme the kids want to do on the unofficial visits is a photo shoot. For him to bring a notebook was even more impressive.
Yeah, I mean that is hilarious. Honestly, it is. Like, that's so awesome though. Like, I would recruit that kid 100%. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. Next up on the list, a young man you saw on Saturday at a Glacier Peak High School. He's listed as an athlete, Trey Lechner, 6'2", 215, the 15th rated player in the state of Washington, 3 stars, currently committed to Washington State. You know, it's interesting because on offense, he was originally a receiver, then he went and played some running back. Now he's kind of back to receiver, but he's also just a guy that you kind of want to get the ball in his hands. But on the other side of the ball is probably where his future is, I would assume. I mean, this is a kid that, as a linebacker, could truly be terrifying.
I agree. And there's a very similar type of game him and Leo Palacy have together, that they're both just get the ball into their hands or get them around the ball defensively, and something special is going to happen. And, you know, watching Trey play, he can catch, he can run, he can hit, he's physical, he can cover. He, you know, is a good route runner. He's a ball player. So, you know, Leo, you got a little bit of company now for, you know, complete all-around football package. I really like what I saw from Trey last fall when I went and saw, I think it was Woodinville against Glacier Yes. Peak on Thursday night. And then seeing him a little bit this offseason to now, you know, he's filling out, but he hasn't lost any of that athleticism or that quickness. So, you know, he too could be another one of those guys like Jack Coletto, who he plays linebacker mostly, but you're going to find ways to get him the ball in situations where he can score and make plays.
Yeah, that's a guy. He's almost got like a little like Taysom Hill to him. You know what I mean? Where like you could play him as that up back on the punt team and snap it to him and let him take off for 30. You know, like he just seems like one of those guys that, you know, you don't know exactly what position you want to start him at, but you just want to get him on the field because he's going to do crazy things. I mean, it 100%. Just it. By the way, that actually breaks the heart saying Taysom Hill because. Yeah, he did it to us on Sunday. Next on the list here, Tylan Jackson, a young man. I don't know if we've ever talked about him really on this podcast, but 6'5", 210 pounds. He's an edge out of Federal Way, 72nd rated player in the state of Washington, but he is committed to Eastern Washington. And this is a kid that, you know, as he fills out, I think he's going to get faster and more physical. And I think he's already pretty stinking good. But the future and the ceiling on this guy could be through the stinking roof.
We talked about how guys can go to the Big Sky and flourish. This is a kid that will end up going to the Big Sky and flourishing. If a Mountain West school doesn't make a push late, heck, it wouldn't surprise me if some Pac-12 schools made a late run now that his senior film is getting out there. But length, speed, explosiveness, he's got a basketball background. He's a little bit on the skinnier side. But you look at him as a blank canvas, and if you're a college strength and conditioning coach or the sports science, the nutrition guy, whatever, you look at that body and you're thinking, okay, we can't teach that length. We can't teach the height, but we can put the weight on him and turn him into a complete monster. And that's what I think he's got the physical ability to be.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of reminds me, as far as like in high school goes, he kind of reminds me of Joe Tryon. You know, when he came out of Hayes and how he was long, he was kind of skinny, and you looked at it and you're like, you know, if this guy could get up to like 235, 240, he could be an absolute menace. And I think that's what Tylan Jackson is, because I think as of right now, there's just so much uncertainty. Like, who is he? You know what I mean? Like, where's he coming from? What's going on here? So he's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on. A teammate of his, Andre Piper Jordan Jr., 6'1", 165, the 11th rated player in the state of Washington. He's listed as a cornerback, and this is a guy, I'll tell you what, he kind of reminds me of his teammate a little bit, Rashawn Clark, where like on defense, maybe you don't notice the athleticism and the explosion nearly as much as when he has the ball in his hands.
Just, you know, again, he's one of those players too that when he gets the ball in his hands, he can make some plays. You know, he covers his side of the field, much like Tylan Jackson. Like, hey, Marcus Izaguirre, Coach Izzy, start giving him extra pizzas and Jimmy John's or Jersey Mike's, because, you know, he's got some guys on his team that have that natural length and height that could just fill out a little bit. And Andre Piper Jordan, when he gets to Oregon State, you know, I could see him being a 3-year starter type guy when he puts that weight on, because he's got all the other tools that you want as a corner, but he is electric. You know, they would have punt returns where him and Rashawn Clarke were both back there. If you're a punter at that point, you're just doinking it off of your long snapper's head or kicking it out of bounds. You don't really want either of those guys to touch it.
No, not at all. You definitely do not want that. Andre Piper Jordan currently committed to Oregon State. The last one on the list here, TJ Crandall out of Skyline High School, 6'1", 185 pounds, listed as a corner. I believe, does he play mostly safety for the Spartans?
He does, yeah. But with a little bit of nickel, too.
Yeah, he just kind of gets all over the place. I mean, he's a guy that you and I were very high on him. I mean, almost from like the first time we saw him at the COVID Sevens. Three stars, 24th rated prospect in the state of Washington, currently committed to Colorado State. What'd you see out there on Saturday with him?
You know, what I love about TJ, we talked a little bit with Trey Lechner, is that you put him on either side of the ball or in the special teams game, and he's going to have an impact. He had a couple of big catches, one that I thought he was going to break across the plane and score a touchdown, ended up going down at the one, had a big, I think, a 45-yard punt return, had a couple of really good tackles where what was impressive is, you know, TJ's not the biggest guy in the world, but he'll come up and run fits, and he'll come in, he'll fire into the box, and he'll take out a running back. And isn't hesitant to get himself, you know, mixed up with the big boys up front. So, you know, you saw good coverage ability, but I really liked his willingness to come up and lace and hat as a defender against backs and linemen that were twice his size.
Yeah, he's one of those kids that you just like being around as well. I mean, he's always got a smile on his face. He always wears those stupid glasses, what are they called, pit vipers or whatever. Like, he's always got those things on. He's always having a good time. And then, you know, he'll come over and shake your hand and say, you know, thanks for coming to watching us type thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just a kid that I really, really like. Kind of reminds me of Rocco Traore in that aspect as well. Brandon, where are you headed this week? What is the Thursday game?
So Thursday I will be watching Auburn Riverside against Kennedy Catholic.
Oh.
There'll be three Pac-12 commits on the field in that game. So that'll be kind of a, you know, nice little NPSL showdown. And then Friday I'm headed to the Midwest, where I will be going to the Notre Dame Stanford game on Saturday.
Nice.
And Lambeau Field on Sunday.
Oh, that's right. This is the trip. I forgot about it.
Mid-season road trip with the Sun.
That's awesome. That should be a lot of fun. I think I might head out to Yelm on Thursday and watch Timberline and Yelm. The Timberline team's playing good football, man. Let me tell you that. Friday, I have no idea where I'm going. Saturday, I have no idea. And then Sunday, I'm getting screwed by Major League Baseball and having to watch the Seahawks at the same time. That being said, he's Brandon Huffman of the Avery Huffman DIPG Foundation and 24/7 Sports. Be sure to check out everything over at the Avery Huffman DIPG Foundation at AveryStrongDIPG.org and AveryStrongDIPG on all social medias. I'm Ryland Spencer from Cascadia Preps.
What's that?
You already know, Jim. CascadiaPreps.com. Be sure to head over there, check everything out. We will talk to you next week.